someone sees a clown and they're like, oh, a clown. Oh, hey, clown, how are you? Next thing you know, you're ripping out their underwear and, you know, and but it's all okay.
That's a clown sexually assaulting somebody. That's pretty funny. Yeah,
clowning is a very easy way to get people riled up.
See the funny little clown, he's hiding behind a smile. They all think he's laughing, but I know he's really crying all the while.
10 years ago, I'd never given clowning much thought. I was a stand-up comedian, and the world of red-nosed men falling over had nothing to teach me, or so I thought. But in 1996, I was researching a novel set in Arizona, and I came across a short description of the clowns of the Pueblo Indians. Now, for the Pueblo clowns, the comedy of shock, offense, and outrage seemed to have a social, moral, even a spiritual purpose in a tradition that went back hundreds, possibly thousands of years. For 10 years, I've wanted to see if I was right when I suspected that the clowns of the Pueblos might be a key to understanding the nature of clowning and, by association, the purpose of humor in the widest possible sense. The trail of oversized footprints that led to Taos Pueblo made a final detour to the Santa Monica hotel room where I interviewed another clown who wasn't scared to confront. Michael Perrick, alias Fucko the Clown, is a scary street performer from Los Angeles who assaults his audience physically as well as emotionally and orchestrates mass clown actions and clown sex parties on a grand scale that are sometimes obscene, sometimes playful, but always look worthwhile from the photos.
One guy actually was so upset with me, he actually pissed on me. I was with one of my performers, and she's like, oh my God! And next thing I know, this guy is like pissing on my arm because he was standing on a car near me.
He stood on a car. He had to get above you.
He had to get above me because he had to pee down on me.
Did you feel that was an indication that you'd succeeded or that you'd failed?
I wasn't really upset about it. I really wasn't. It was like, I had provoked this guy so badly to a point.
Yeah.
It had worked. You know, obviously he thought that he had triumphed. He had done something to me, but I was just like, oh, whatever. You know, it was just, and I didn't even wash up. I let it dry on my outfit.
Yeah, which of course is what the character would do. But
exactly.
You yourself probably wouldn't do that.
No, I normally would not have done that. As a clown, big deal.
I'm sitting in an adobe-style motel on the edge of Highway 518 in Taos, New Mexico, where I've come to finally see a bit of Pueblo Indian clowning, hopefully, after 10 years of reading about it and being mildly obsessed with it. And it's quite a big deal for me.
I remember I would hide behind my mom's skirt, and she would grab, get me, and I'd go, don't worry, you know, don't worry. They're not going to do nothing. And they grabbed my little brother, and they threw him in the river.
There was a character that was going around and basically laughing at people and throwing things at them almost.
They won't allow cameras of any kind, and they won't allow cell phones because the cell phones have cameras.
Mm.
And if they confiscate yours, you will not get it back.
A lot of what I remember is hallucinations and then waking up in the backseat of a car in my puddle of my own drool. So.
Right. Well, that's a success then for the guy.
They are the finest piece of theater in northern New Mexico.
There's lots of different groups of Pueblo Indians in the southwestern states. And they've all got a broadly similar culture, but lots of specific differences. The word Pueblo derives from the architecture, you know, that kind of adobe housing, sort of stacked up in levels around a kind of public plaza. But I'm in the northern part of the state, because I'm going to go to Taos Pueblo to try and see the clowns of the Tewa. But it's hard to find out anything about the clowns or what I can expect to see in the Pueblo tomorrow afternoon. Most of the descriptions of the performances are from anthropologists over 100 years ago. There's no photos apart from kind of sepia tinge ones from the turn of the century. No one wants to tell you anything about it. You can't get anyone on the phone from the tourist office or the Pueblo. I mean, there are some recordings available of kind of non-sacred music, but on the whole, nothing. In fact, yesterday I was in a bookshop here in Taos, and I said to the woman behind the counter, who I think was a Tiwa Indian, I said, "Have you got any books on the San Jeronimo Day Festival?" And she just went, "No, there aren't any. It's our most sacred day. There is no books on it." And I felt like I'd caused offence inadvertently. But this San Jeronimo Day Festival is one of the few opportunities left to see the Pueblo clans in action. And this morning at the little motel I'm staying in, I got talking to the maid, who's called Daphne Mondragon, and she's been going to it since she was a child. So, when did you first go to the festival at the
time? About a little girl, a very young little girl, like about 7, 8 years old. What I remember, when my mom took us, they would like dress up. They would put like paint on their faces.
The clowns.
The clowns, yeah. But they're called chupinetes.
Right.
Just looking at them, I remember I would hide behind my mom's skirt, and she would grab me, "Don't worry, you know, don't worry. They're not going to do nothing." And they grabbed my little brother and they threw him in the river. that was their tradition. You know, yeah. I don't know if they still do it today, but I remember them doing that. But anyways, as the story continues, they had two big long, like telephone poles. And they had a sheep in each pole. And each one of these chupinetes had to climb to see who would get there before the other. And they had to untie him. And whoever bring them down would win. And they couldn't climb with ropes. They couldn't climb with, you know, how they could put stacks.
Yeah, yeah.
They had to climb with themselves.
And so what did the clowns look like?
You couldn't tell who they were.
Right.
They were just really painted.
Did that make them frightening that you couldn't tell who they were?
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, especially to a little girl.
Right. There are dozens of different subclasses of Pueblo clowns, and when I was at the Hopi villages 6 years ago, I bought the little wooden doll, they call them cachinas, of a mudhead clown who looks like a kind of clay-faced pig. But the main type of Pueblo clown is the cachare, and that's probably what we'll see tomorrow. When you read descriptions of the clowns from the 1800s, it's really amazing the stuff that's going on. There's people running around kind of simulating copulation and big bowls of urine being flung around at people and drunk, and it's really kind of full on. And obviously this is why these performances got stamped on by the white authorities in the 1800s. But more recent studies have suggested that even these performances had a moral, possibly even sacred function. And they often happened alongside more obviously devout religious ceremonies. Susan Bockrook, she's working here in the Moby Dickens bookshop in Taos. She's been to San Jeronimo Day many times.
You never approach one. I've never seen either a native or an Anglo approach them in a personal fashion, ask them a question or anything of that sort. They're very forbidding and they're very funny. And there was an old woman sitting with a shawl around her shoulders on the bank of the river, and she was watching the whole scene, and this clown came down and he put his arm around her shoulder and he whispered in her ear, obviously something that was quite personal, and she put both of her hands over her mouth and giggled out of control. So that was just food for the feast. And he went over and got another chair and came down and sat right beside her and snuggled with her and continued whispering in her ear, and she was laughing uncontrollably. And that's my favorite story about the Kasharis.
And can you just tell us what they look like? What kind of costumes they're in?
Oh my. They're painted black and white with large stripes, maybe 9 inches across their arms, and they have usually a loincloth on, and they have corn husks tied above their ears and a lot of makeup on their faces. And as with, I think, most really good clowns, they become the clown. They lose their own identity and become the Kosharis. They also snatch children from their mothers and put them in the river. They're not going to hurt them. They just scare the hell out of them. But that's an interesting thing to watch. And so the young boys will tease them. In spite of what everyone says to all young boys, do not tease the clowns. They just have to. I'm sure you understand how that is.
Yeah, so I won't tease the clowns. Yes. I don't want to get thrown in the water. I need to be there to observe. But you don't have to go to the middle of a desert, to the oldest settlement in the American continent, to find a clown that thinks he has a sacred purpose.
I'm putting a dog collar on.
Here's one in a small parish church in Sevenoaks, Kent.
Being both a clown and a priest, I've always worn a dog collar as part of my costume, but it's ill-fitting, because like most clowns, nothing quite fits, so it kind of hangs a bit loose, which seems to be appropriate, half collar, half fallen halo.
The Pueblo Indians don't believe there's anything wrong with having clowns at religious ceremonies, and Rowley Bain is a British vicar who agrees with them. When he was at theological college in the 70s, he wrote a thesis about the idea of Jesus as a clown. And then he went to clown school. And now he performs as a clown in churches, prisons, hospitals, and at religious ceremonies.
I mean, I've custard pied 10 bishops. Because oh, right. You have to bring the mighty down from their seat. First one was Jim Thompson, who was a lovely guy. It was a clergy conference, and it was all to do with a quiz. He's got to answer 10 easy questions, but the last one... is what is Matthew 5 verse 39? The answer is turn the other cheek. But he gets a custard pie on to get a clue, and then he gets the other one. But when we did Michael Nazir Ali, who's the Bishop of Rochester, he went up in the estimation of most of the clergy in his diocese because they'd suddenly seen that he could play, that he wasn't quite the remote academic they'd assumed that he was. Every time I see him now, he makes a huge sign of the cross to kind of keep me away.
To protect himself from the vampire clown. Right.
But, I mean, he loved it, and his whole diocese loved it. And I dare to suggest that the diocese was changed because of that conference and because this idiot was there.
The diocese was changed?
Yeah. What had been a very traditional and stuffy conservative diocese, it probably still is, was certainly changed over those few days, and people were grateful for that.
So, presumably, you see a connection between the vicar and the clown, and between Jesus even, because all those people try and tell us things about society by showing what would go wrong if we didn't follow the rules.
Yeah, there's a whole prophetic bit about the clown and, of course, of Jesus, because he turns everything upside down so you can see it the right way up. But I also think he had a huge sense of humour that we've lost sight of, and all his storytelling and his punchlines were what amazed people and surprised them, because you can begin to tell the truth. I mean, the clown is the jester, the truth-teller, and the Christian claim is that Jesus is the way, the truth and the life. So it's the kind of the truth-teller bit is one of my models of the clown.
So a bishop's queuing up to be custard-pied by you now, hoping it will have the same transformative effect relationship with their public.
You have to be careful with your bishops. You have to, like all these things, clowns can only play with people who want to play, and then some bishops can't play. So you can't play with them. Because even though you're custard pieing somebody, they aren't victims, they have to play with you.
We walked into an office building in downtown Los Angeles. About 10 of us.
Dressed as clowns?
As clowns.
Yeah.
And we get into the lobby, the receptionist is there, lobby ambassador was there. And we're like, we're here for John's birthday! You know, just give out a name. Oh, but they're all in a meeting. Well, that's okay. And we went right into the board meeting of all the men in suits. There was about 50 people in there with suits. And we're just going, we're here for John's birthday. They all point to one guy and, you know, the girls are taking off their tops. They're, you know, giving him lap dances. We're stealing the donuts. And then I started, like, making drawings with the coffee. And they're like, the guy's like, it's not my birthday. And we say, oh, well, is this the so-and-so company? And they're like, no, that's on floor, because we looked at the register, and they're like, that's on floor 8. Oh, sorry! So we go to floor 8. We did about six, seven floors before we finally got kicked out of the building, and it's...
And presumably there's no financial gain in this. There's no point in it other than a sense of chaos.
No, most of us are rather poor.
Mm. So what was at the planning stages, what was the incentive behind this clown action?
It was, hey, let's dress up like clowns and go into an office building.
Right. And that's enough, isn't
that
it?
That was enough. It was just all us weirdos going, yeah, that's a great way to spend a Monday afternoon.
Michael Perrick, our confrontational Californian clown. Now, Michael first saw Pueblo clowns at the Zuni Pueblo during a ritual involving hallucinogenic cacti, which he was somehow allowed to attend as the honoured guest of a local doctor when he was only 14 years old. And quite frankly, I don't think he should have been.
There was a character that was going around and basically laughing at people and throwing things at them almost. But a lot of what I remember is hallucinations and then waking up in the backseat of a car in my puddle of my own drool. So.
Right. So this clown in this situation was happening alongside what is basically a sort of a religious ceremony.
Yes.
And they didn't feel that that was inappropriate, to have the serious ceremony being mocked simultaneously.
No, not at all, because those are parts of reality. The whole idea is that there's a seriousness of your life. Things that have to be done, such as eating, drinking, you know, social mores. But then there's also the things that you do not need to take so seriously. You need to be able to step outside yourself and say, yeah, that was pretty stupid. You need to be able to laugh at yourself inside.
And the clown being there helps that to happen.
Definitely.
So I'm digging around for odd props. Some camel cigarettes for doing the camel through the eye of a needle. Some balloons for putting needles through.
When you're doing Christian clowning, are you a clown first and a vicar second, or the other way around?
Probably both together.
Right.
In a sense, I mean, all my material has some Christian story, some content, but I think actually the clown, in a sense, is the most important thing, because that's the mysterious figure that everyone connects with, which is why every age, every culture has had its clowns, its fools, because they're the wise ones. Now where's that gone? A feather with any luck is under here somewhere, because that's for the Archangel Gabriel. All will be revealed in due course. But I think there's a simplicity and an innocence of the clown that allows them to tell the story in such a way that people can recognise it, the truth of it, for themselves. And I think when Jesus came along, he in a sense did the same thing, which is why Jesus' clown works as a model. Because instead of all the high and mighty scribes and Pharisees, along came this idiot who was prepared to die on a cross and was accused of being a drunkard and a friend of sinners, who told great tales with great punchlines. It was good fun to be with. And that isn't the model that most people think of as religious people.
No.
Peacemakers. Bike. Slack. Oh, yes, I've got everything. They usually start 5 minutes late with these things, to allow the audience, if there are any, to get here.
So it's Saturday morning and we're just on our way up to Taos Pueblo to see the clowns. The locals have told us they'll come out at about 1 o'clock. All the local literature says, do not make eye contact with a clown. Do not ask anyone at the Taos Pueblo any direct questions about their lifestyle, beliefs or culture. If you are welcomed into their houses, do not introduce yourselves to them, as this is considered rude. Wait a reasonable amount of time before doing so. If the clowns pick on you, be sure to participate and act like a good sport, but do not join in uninvited. Be wary about applauding anything, as it's the equivalent of applauding a mass, because this is a religious ceremony rather than a performance. It seems like a cultural nightmare. You're not allowed to take recording equipment in or cameras. You can't even take phones in now because of all the technology. I don't know what it'll be like. I mean, it could be terrible, which would be a shame after 10 years of waiting. See you on the other side.
See the funny little clown, he's hiding behind the smile.
Can I try a trick?
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. A perfectly ordinary piece of newspaper. We call the Church Times an ordinary newspaper. We're going to try and make it disappear, to vanish before your very eyes. Somebody should. We tear it in half. 2 pieces.
Cause you see, I am that funny little clown.
Right, I've just got back in the car after the Taos Pueblo San Jeronimo Day
clown performance, which was everything you could hope for and more. I got there about half an hour before it started and walked around the Pueblo, which was kind of lots of buildings that kind of go up in steps either side of a big plaza with a little river running through it. And then just a little bit after 1 o'clock, there was this kind of crowing, screeching noise. And then on the roof of the highest buildings overlooking the plaza, 10 clowns came up in striped black and white paint with their hair tied up in bunches, with kind of big clumps of corn sheaves attached to their heads and different coloured kind of loincloths on. And they were silhouetted against this bright blue sky, making these unearthly kind of screaming noises that it was more frightening than anything. And you were really worried about when they were going to come down into the Pueblo, what was going to happen. And gradually they made their way down off the over the kind of steps of the buildings and ended up in the square and began to harass people. And then they kept grabbing small children in a really scary way that made all the children cry, and running to the river and throwing them in this river that was about a foot deep. And kids were all right, but they didn't enjoy it. And it was very funny seeing frightened children. And then they cornered a very fat man on a very narrow bridge crossing the river and attempted to push him off. Gradually, more and more clowns tried to push him until they had to admit that it wasn't possible and went for a less fat but still fat man and just pushed him off the bridge into the water. You didn't have to be looking at the clowns to feel their presence in the plaza. You could sense that in another area of the village something frightening and mad and hilarious was happening. There was always this palpable sense that anything could kick off at any point. Somehow the clowns managed to cultivate an authority, which meant that they could kind of collectively push through groups of people and force people to do what they want and keep the day moving. And I think it's because they just genuinely were quite frightening. I was standing watching something else and one came up behind me and shouted something in Tewa, I think, to move. And I just jumped out of the way really obediently. The last thing I wanted to do was to interact with them. I was terrified that something was going to happen. When they step over the roof of those buildings and come into view, they fully inhabit those characters. They fully inhabit the ideas of being these kind of mischief makers, these dangerous goblins, giving them a license to do anything without any sense of embarrassment or fear. It was everything I could have hoped for, and hopefully there'll be some people around that can help us make more sense of it. But if there aren't, if I never understand any more of what I've seen than the feelings it's left me with, I don't really care.
Clowns at the village are seen as teachers, as disciplinarians, and of course they invoke humour.
Rick Romancito, who's part Zuni, part Hopi, edits the Taos News, and he's just made a short film set in the Pueblo. Now, he's written about sacred Pueblo clowns, albeit in the broadest possible terms. There's lots of things he's not prepared to discuss, like how the clowns are selected, you know, whether it's a job that you're chosen for or is it passed on, and how the routines are worked out. But he did agree that part of the clown's function was to preserve the moral integrity of the community.
They show by example how not to behave.
And in your article about that, you used the phrase sacred disciplinarians. Mm-hmm. That's quite an interesting juxtaposition of ideas. I wonder if you'd be prepared to elaborate on that.
Well, they do this in a couple of different ways. One is in that they punish inappropriate behavior. Like, for instance, if children are behaving naughty, the clowns will literally pick them up and take them over to the river and toss them in.
I saw that happen a lot yesterday.
Right? Yeah, but it's not actually viewed as punishment. It's viewed as a blessing in the hopes that the water from the river will enable them to live a cleaner, more fruitful and beneficial life. They even will take the opportunity to ridicule prominent members of the community, tribal leaders. Anybody might be a target.
So this is what was going on when the guys were brought into the ring at the end and dressed up as women, and they brought out these 2 7-foot guys that were obviously identifiable members of the community as being the giant men, and a very beautiful girl was made to walk around in different sized shoes that gave her some difficulty.
Well, I didn't see that part of it, but I'll have to take your word on that.
Okay.
By doing these kinds of things, it's in a way kind of a catharsis, because tribal life kind of emphasizes a democratic outlook that no one person should consider themselves greater than another. It's sort of taking people down a notch a little.
There was a lot of interaction with, well, what you call the Anglos here, getting any guys in cowboy hats to, like, have little gunfights with each other, which was very...
They've done this for many, many, many years. But I will tell you that a long time ago, in probably the 1800s or so, the clowns were 10 times worse than what you see now. Their antics might be considered nowadays to be X-rated.
When you talk about the phrase sacred clown, it's almost like a light bulb coming up above my head and going, oh, yeah, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. And I do stand-up comedy myself, so obviously it's very flattering, the idea that you could somehow somehow be sacred would be great. I'm not, you know, not
well,
sure.
Well, but you're just a man out of time, that's all it is.
Is that what it is? The American stand-up comedian George Carlin said that shock is just an uptown word for surprise. In a time when people feel like they have the right not to be offended, and government appears to pander to this notion, it's worth remembering that shock and surprise are often indivisible and are essential tools of comedy. After my 10-year wait, seeing the Pueblo clowns and the response of their gleefully liberated audience in the little social space between the white adobe church, the sparkling river, and the sharply rising houses reminded me in no uncertain terms of what comedy is for. Evidently, the Pueblo clowns think that shock has a social, moral purpose. Thankfully, they're still not quite alone.
As a clown, do you feel you have a duty to offend?
Oh, God, yeah. especially as my character.
When you can get somebody who really is confronted with something that is uncomfortable and they're forced to confront it, it allows people to look at themselves and then not be so upset about it the next time it happens.
Right. But is the world ready for a clown character based on the Prophet Muhammad, do you think?
That's a good idea.
Would you be the
great person to idea? We should have, like, Muhammad and every religious icon, you know, Buddha the clown. Of course, he's already a clown. I make it my point to offend everyone. I do not discriminate between sexual orientation or religion.
You're an equal opportunities offender.
I am equal opportunity offender, and I pride myself on that.